Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Albert Breer of MMQB. He joins us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Albert, welcome back to the show, bud.
Hey, sorry about that. Me and Keith always get caught up talking Big Ten football, so I apologize.
Anything good?
We were talking about like certain situations and everything else and how dominant one team might be over every other team in the conference, you know, normal stuff.
Yeah, okay. like how another team might not be as good, like a team that plays north of the first team you were talking about?
Well, you mean like when they stopped playing against Air, all of a sudden they didn't look so unstoppable? Mm. Is that what you're talking about?
I think that could be exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, so.
Okay.
Albert, hey, everybody does. Some teams play Notre Dame early in the year. Other teams play Hawaii. I don't make the schedule.
Listen, we can play Colorado State. Juggernaut that is Colorado State. You go ahead and you take that bullet early.
Don't forget about UConn.
Oh, man. I mean, the fighting Jim Mora Jr.'s, when you can go ahead face off against Jim Mora Jr., you got to do it.
They didn't even cover the 50.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah. How about that?
All right, Albert, let's get to the Browns. Why are the Browns 2-2?
I'd say it's details at this point, right? You know, against Atlanta, they ran the ball well. I think they played well enough to win the game, you know. But you let little things slip, you lose a game like that, and there's the obvious against the Jets, and you know, it sort of feels like they blew a golden opportunity, guys. You know, like they had a chance to start the season 4-0, and you know, again, like I've said this over and over again, I'll say it till I'm blue in the face. Like, I think it's really impressive the way that they've run the ball. You know, considering they've got a backup quarterback in there and a reworked receiver group. I think it really, if you let the little things slip, it's going to cost you. And, that's sort of the way it's gone for them. And not having Myles Garrett didn't help, obviously, on Sunday. And the Jets game was a Jets game. So here you are, 2-2. Schedule is about to get a whole lot more difficult. And I think you've sort of blown your margin for error.
Kevin Stefanski, you know, a lot of fans are blaming him for the loss after this week's game specifically because of some of the decisions he made, you know, a lot of which, you know, had to do with maybe – you know, going for it on fourth down in three on the opening drive of the game. They get 0 points out of that. You know, throwing on second and goal from the one when you've got Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Is Stefanski overthinking things? My point is, I get going for it on certain fourth downs when you feel like you can get it. But shouldn't you factor in who your quarterback is? Like fourth and three at the 4-yard line, if I had Deshaun Watson or Lamar Jackson, like, different story. But Jacoby Brissett, to me, it makes me a little bit nervous.
It's so funny you say that, Dustin, because, like, the opposite conversation's happening in New England this week, and I've been hearing it all week here where they had Bailey Zappi in that game, a rookie fourth-round pick, and they were very conservative, and it got them to overtime against the Packers. You know, but then in the end, they ran the ball twice on their final possession, and then, you know, got their quarterback in third and long, and it didn't work out. So I think you can go both ways with that, but I would err on the side of, you know, managing the game a certain way because you do not have your starting quarterback in there. And I think it's always incumbent on the head coach to manage the game in a way that's sort of indicative of who the team he has is. And, like, who the Browns are right now is a team that needs to
rely on its running game to shorten games and to build leads and then allow that pass rush to sort of take over. And, you know, when you look at the defensive side, when you don't have Myles Garrett and Clowney out there, obviously that takes away from that. So, look, like you, like in a vacuum, you know, are those gambles, are they explainable? Absolutely they are. When you consider where the Browns are, where they were on Sunday, what they had, where I think you had to know going in, every point was going to be valuable, you know, and that game was going to be played in a phone booth, not just because of the way you're playing, but because of what the Falcons are doing, how creative they are with their run game and how they don't have a ton in their passing game right now. Marcus Mariota back there, I think you certainly can make the argument that they should have, again, valued every point they could get and been careful and maybe conservative with the way they run their offense, as not to give up field position or losing the in, on the margins again.
Albert, looking to the Myles Garrett situation after the car accident, obviously he missed the Atlanta game, as you mentioned, but after the accident, it came out that he's been had a little bit of a history with some speeding tickets as well. Do we know internally what the Browns' reaction was to Myles's accident and whether there was any conversation behind the scenes about that off the field side of things?
Yeah, I think the first thing, of course, is concern for his own well-being. So, you know, you don't overlook that. Like, that was their first concern. I definitely think there was some eye-rolling in the building. You know, like, that, you know, this is, again, like, habitual behavior at this point. You see the car he has. I don't think anybody's buying that car to go 35 and a 30. You know what I mean? Like, so, you know, I certainly think that the people in the building looked at that and said, this is something that's become a problem for us, and now it's taking one of our best players off the field. And I would assume, and I don't know this part for sure, but I would assume there was a pretty direct talking to as far as, you know, Myles Garrett and with Myles Garrett as far as like his behavior over the last few years and how this could be repeated in season in such a critical spot. You know, even that it happened at all, but in particular that it would happen in season this way.
Albert, who's the best team in the AFC North?
I mean, I'd say based on the play to this point, Baltimore. You know, Baltimore blows the lead against Miami, but they were up by 3 touchdowns on the Dolphins. They blew the lead against Buffalo, but they were up by 17 on Buffalo. And they take care of business in their other 2 games. They beat New England pretty soundly. I think if you want to, like, if you just, you know, were dropped on planet Earth on September 1st and were asked what's the most impressive of these teams, I'd say through a month, it's probably Baltimore. I would say the team with the ceiling remains the Bengals, though. And it does feel like they're starting to come around. And, you know, you see the way their young players have sort of responded and answered the bell after starting the way they started. You know, and I think a huge part of this and being able to beat the Dolphins in the manner that they beat the Dolphins, to be able to win 5 days before that, and to get them to get to a point where now, you know, they are even up and their heads sort of, you know, above water, is continuing to get that offensive line more and more experience. And, you know, I think you can look at Kansas City last year as sort of the blueprint for what they're doing. Kansas City had a similarly just terrible experience in the Super Bowl, right? Like where, I mean, Patrick Mahomes was running for his life half the time, and they turned over all 5 spots in their offensive line. They wound up by the, you know, through the first few weeks of the season, one of the holdovers went back in, but they settled in with 4 new starters on the offensive line. And that's like a lot of new, that's a lot of new faces. That's a lot of communication and cohesion that needs to come together. And early in the year, everybody was asking that question, what's wrong with Patrick Mahomes? By the end of the year, it was a team strength. And I think that's sort of where the Bengals are right now. They knew it was going to be bumpy early with so many new parts on their offensive line. Obviously, Joe Burrow missed a good piece of camp with the appendicitis. And so getting, you know, Ted Karras and Alex Kappa and Lyle Collins and their rookie left guard to where they needed to be from a communication standpoint was always going to be a major point of emphasis early in the year. And I think they're making real progress in that area. They're not, you know, where the Chiefs were at the end of last year. But I think the idea is that group that was a weakness last year is going to wind up being much stronger in the long run for all the work that they've done. And so the hope is, they can kind of tread water and stay in the hunt, and then get to November, and by November, you know, you've got an offensive line that's actually one of the stronger points on the team rather than a weakness.
Albert, looking at the Browns' schedule here, you know, the next seven games before Deshaun Watson comes back, you got the Chargers this week, then the Pats, Ravens, Bengals, bye week, Dolphins, Bills, Buccaneers. I mean, it's not easy, right? I mean, the Patriots are a game that I think the Browns should win. I don't feel great about this Sunday. Is it more likely that they'll be 4-7 or 7-4?
I mean, right now I got to say 4-7. I think it's more like, I think the most likely is they're somewhere in between that, that they're a 5-6 or 6-5. If I had to guess, I'd say they're either a game over or a game under when they get Deshaun Watson back. I think, you know, you're looking at a team right now that, quite frankly, is still sort of figuring out the right way to win. You know, and I think you saw that against Atlanta with some of the gambles that you mentioned there, Dustin. I think, you know, you saw that. I think you saw that in the Jets game, you know, where they just couldn't close them out and the defense just couldn't find a way to get it done. And so, you know, a month in the season, I think they're still sort of finding their way. And with the schedule getting more difficult now, I think they're going to take their lumps over the next few weeks. And, you know, the hope is, again, that you can kind of maintain what you've been able to create in the run. I think Bill Callahan, you know, the offensive line coach, the run game coordinator, deserves huge credit for finding a way to run the ball and be diverse enough in the running game where teams can't just stack the box against them. And Kareem Hunt, it's obviously a great credit to the linemen, too. But I'm telling you, if they get into a situation where they can't run the ball that way, I have a hard time seeing where they're going to win games. So that part of the game, that part of the team is going to have to kind of maintain its level. And they've been at almost 200 yards a game, I think, the last 4 weeks, right? And then, you know, I think from there, it's going to be about creating an identity and figuring out how to win games around that strength of the team.
Albert, quickly to Pittsburgh. Did the Steelers play Kenny Pickett because he's ready, or did they play him because they were desperate?
I think they played him because he earned the job, and I'm saying that in the context of, you know, the locker room sort of making this helping Mike Tomlin make this decision. And you know, one of the things with Kenny, this is his reputation at Pitt, was that he was never a great practice player. But when the lights came on, he always played really well. And he had great feel and instinct for the game and could manage a game and could operate there and all that stuff. And you see that when the lights go on. Well, you know, that manifested during the preseason through training camp and into the preseason games. You know, Mitch would outplay him in practice, and then Kenny would come into the game after Mitch and would light it up. And the players saw that, but they also saw what was happening in practice. So, the Minkah Fitzpatricks and the TJ Watts and, you know, all the veteran players, the Chase Claypools of the world, they don't care. The Deontay Johnsons, they don't care what's good for the franchise 3 years from now. They care about what's good for them right now. And I think, you know, part of the process, and Mike Tomlin's always got a great feel for the pulse of his locker room, is making sure that the locker room's on board with Kenny Pickett as the best option. And I think after seeing what Mitch produced over the first month of the year, seeing how it was holding the offense back, everybody got to see that, not just the coaches, the players got to see that too. And then having the backlog of knowing how Kenny lit it up the season, I think that, you know, Mike sort of felt like, okay, like this is where we are, and it's the right time to bring the guy in who we think is probably best equipped to perform for the team under the lights. And the truth is right now, you know, at 1-3, I think if you have to take your lumps, well, you know, that's some pains with the young quarterback. It's not the worst in the world because not better anyway. You weren't doing a whole lot better otherwise.
Albert, you're like the Ohio State of reporters, and others are like the Michigan of reporters. They're second best to you. Buddy, we appreciate you as always.
All right, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
If that's true, if, one, the eye-rolling 100% makes sense if you've been through this already with Miles a few times with speeding, but I really hope that he's right, that the Browns sat down with Miles and had a really important conversation. When we talked about it, my point was not that Miles doesn't deserve your concern or he doesn't deserve criticism internally. I just think there were a lot of people taking shots at Miles because it was easy to take shots at Miles.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that the organization, who I think has not done a great job at communicate or, and maybe punishing guys or being stern with guys, strict with guys. I don't think this is that kind of organization. I think it's a good thing to hear that they, you know, hypothetically, or they saw the need to sit down with Miles on this.
Yeah, listen, I think that Miles' behavior not only puts himself at risk, but, you know, when he puts himself at risk, it puts the team at risk, you know? Obviously, he's more important than a football game. We get that. But, like, you're getting paid lots of money to be on the field, to be eligible to play, to be healthy enough to play. It's a tough enough sport as it is, just playing the games on Sundays, to put more risk on yourself as a player, as a person, by driving recklessly, frankly.
So I think fans trying to hold players to a standard is ridiculous. I think media trying to do it as well. Meaning, like, above a standard that you would for any of us, right? It, like, people what wanted Miles suspended. Oh, they need to show Miles what. No, your thoughts on the relationship between the team and the player aren't in line with what reality is of the relationship between the two. But I think the team should hold Miles at a different standard. Players and media, I think that stuff's phony baloney. But I think if you're Miles and you've got a $100 million contract and you are supposed to be one of the leaders of this team, I think it's fair internally to be a little bit stronger with Miles. I think organization should have that double standard within how you treat Miles Garrett.
I don't think they should suspend him.
No.
But I think that a stern conversation should be had internally, as you say, where they let him know, like, we're not doing that.
Well, and anymore. I think Albert led it the right way, which was the initial thing was just concern. Like, it's not Miles, we pay you $100 million, so you need to do what we say. It's Miles, we love you. You've got a really bright future. You can do anything you want within football and post-football. We'd hate to see you screw that up.
Yeah.
Screwing around with a really nice car.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you get your whole life to drive cars fast, you know, to do reckless things if you want to. And listen, you want to race? Like, go to the track.
Or just don't.
Or just don't go 120 miles. I mean, like, I know he wasn't in this case, but he was 20 over the limit on a wet road.
It's like when Jeff Kent blew up his knee in a motorcycle accident. Like, it's not that I want players to deprive themselves. And again, calling Miles out specifically for reckless driving when I think this is commonplace at young dudes with a lot of money and fast cars. Like, it's not a Miles problem.
I've done it.
It's not an NFL problem. It's a young athlete with a buttload of money and nice cars and an adrenaline fix. Like, that's what this is. It is. But I think, as an organization, I don't think it's your job to parent these dudes, but I think it's like a big brother thing. Like, it's Kevin Stefanski's job. It's Joe Woods' job to be like, listen, man, I don't give a damn about the car. I give a damn about you. I don't even care about the Atlanta game. Like, that's the thing that I got mad about. Like, be concerned for Miles' health. We should feel fortunate the guy only missed one damn game, because he could have missed the rest of the season. You know, everybody goes to, when it comes to how we should treat Miles and how ashamed we should be, how we should look down at Miles, it's always, well, it could be worse. It could have killed somebody. Where's the empathy in that? Like, that's where I look at it. Like, I hope that Miles isn't too proud to recognize that even somebody as strong and Adonis-like as him, his career can be ended. And not just that, his quality of life can be ended. And I think the thing that frustrates me with how people react to stuff is they forget that these guys are human. Miles is a human. Miles isn't perfect. And I wouldn't want one of my fellow coworkers suspended or fired for reckless driving. Now, yeah, if there was alcohol involved, obviously that's a different story. But, like, habitual speeding, I don't want any of you guys fired over something like that. But, like, at some point I'd come to you and be like, hey, man, listen, I get it. But, like, I don't I don't want you to become a statistic. Like that, I feel like he
was really close to becoming a stat. You know, when you look at that vehicle and the damage that it suffered, for him just to walk away from that with just a couple bumps and bruises and scrapes, like that's, he's really lucky.
But I think because these guys are superhuman, sometimes we forget that they're still the human part of superhuman. So I like what Albert had to say there about Miles and the team's thoughts on Miles' reckless driving. We're going to get more into what Albert had to say because we started the show talking about the Browns' path to above 500 record and how confident we feel. Albert did not portray a lot of confidence when talking about the Browns' next seven games. Oh, oh,
oh, O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto
Parts. T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.